Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Tonight, we continue one of my favorite traditions here at the White House by celebrating the music that's at the heart of the American story. And as we come to the end of Black History Month, I can't think of a better way to do it than by honoring the legendary sound of Motown.
I know y'all just ain't gonna sit down now. I know you ain't gonna sit down on me. Get up, get up, get on up. Get up, get on up. Get up, get on up. Get up, get on up, stay on the scene. A presidential machine.
This is the change you asked for.
Stay, you ready to dance
for what you wanted. You wanted change and hope. There it is. You got Motown at the White House while the Middle East is on fire. Let's hear a little bit more of the new White House.
Not the black side in you, right?
So there we have a comedian, so-called, insulting the president of the United States, saying that his dancing, that is the president's dancing, obviously wasn't from his black side. That's the change that you got. Now let's look at the serious side of the world. Gaddafi, who I'm honorably calling Gadfly now, is shooting unarmed protesters and children. U.S. citizens describe horror as they dock in Malta. I saw Gaddafi's troops shoot children with heavy machine guns. Of course, if an Israeli fires a bullet that isn't a bullet, a rubber bullet, the U.N. goes into overdrive and condemns Jews and Israelis. But if an Arab fires machine guns at unarmed citizens, there's no hearing at the United Nations. The biggest story is that the Chinese workers on in Libya were evacuated by a ship. 4,500 of them were able to get off of the country, out of the country, because ships were used by the Chinese. While our president, who was getting down with Motown, sent in a ferry with a draft that was so small that it couldn't get through the rough seas. The Chinese had no problem getting aboard the big ships because they used the big ship. That's what you use in heavy seas, big ships. Our Navy, of course, was busy doing diversity training somewhere at sea, teaching people how to sue the EOC, using the EOC and federal laws, making certain that everyone feels comfortable in the U.S. Navy and teaching them how to have children and their rights and their benefits. Of course, the Navy was not used. Other countries such as Greece and Turkey were able to rescue thousands of their own citizens despite the rough weather. Earlier in the week, State Department spokesmouth P.J. Crowley said Libyan authorities had refused the U.S. permission to land any chartered aircraft. We had requested permission to bring chartered aircraft into Tripoli. Permission was not granted. And the president, of course, couldn't be bothered. He was busy getting down with Jamie Foxx and other Motown folks. And therefore, they sent in a ferry, a rusty ferry that they got from somewhere called the Maria Dolores. And they did rescue the American citizens. And that's good news. They did get rescued. So we can't, I guess we got to count on that. The boat was packed with U.S. citizens. Gunships were shooting at protesters, according to U.S. witnesses. Experts are asking why a bigger boat wasn't used like the Greeks and Turks. The answer is because we have the most incompetent, corrupt president in American history, surrounded by the most incompetent, corrupt Democrats in Democrat history. Other than that, things are just fine. Here's another story for you, not to do with Libya. Oregon inmates win claims for lost sunglasses, pictures, even pornography. Taxpayers in Oregon may be surprised to know they dish out an average of $60,000 a year to compensate inmates who claim prison officials damaged or lost things like their sunglasses, their TV, or even their pornography. This year, inmate Todd Ritchie was awarded $260 for a television he said was damaged during a search of his cell. Nathan Bennett got $125 for 250 pages of pornography he said were improperly confiscated from his cell and the state was ordered to pay, and so forth and so on. In fact, one of the inmates was a sex abuse inmate, Edward Thomas, He got $100 out of the $675 he wanted for 9 missing family photos, but it cost the state another $700 in legal services. Now, it's a minor story, admittedly, but the reason I'm reading it to you is to show you once again that liberalism is a mental disorder, where even the prisoners have more rights than the prison guards. What else do you want to talk about? Warheads on foreheads? Send them to Hades, not to The Hague. This is the Savage Nation. It's open mic to Mike Friday. So let's have a little music while we're talking about the White House and President Obama celebrating Motown in a musical presentation. Or we could, if you'd like to talk about that's going on in the United States of America right here on the Savage Nation. There are other big stories on michaelsavage.com, which I may as well go to since many of you do go there every day. Dems hiding in plain spite. Did you know that the Wisconsin Assembly passed a bill taking away union rights? That's right. And the Dems erupted shouting, shame, shame to the GOP as it passes a bill. Now, of course, when the Dems were in the majority, they gloated over passing every left-wing bill they could, and the Republicans just took it like men instead of shouting shame or hiding in another state. Combat troops to get gay sensitivity training. Yes, you heard me correctly. They're going to get gay sensitivity training on the battlefield. Obama can't wait to give it to them. They're going to get directly on the battlefield about the new policy on gays instead of waiting until they return to home base in the United States. And so, therefore, the training will go on the battlefield. That's what the Department of Defense wants right now. Don't call me on that. There's nothing you can say that hasn't been said already. Gaddafi militiamen open fire on protesters in Libyan capital. U.S. is going to impose sanctions on Libya. Oh, they should be tough sanctions. I wonder what they're going to withhold from Libya. And, of course, the oil. What are we going to withhold from them? Tell me what we're going to withhold from them. So what is Obama going to do about all of this? I guess what the next celebration will be is anyone's guess. 1-800-449-8255. Mike in New York, welcome from WOR. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, it is a pleasure to get through to you. You are a true patriot.
Well, the reason you got through is it's a slow Friday and no one's calling. Otherwise, you would have waited. I took it because I was desperate. No one's calling today, Mike. I don't know what happened.
But, you know, I just want to know that now once this Libya thing comes to a head and Gaddafi's out of there,
yeah.
why do the American people, why are we going to have to give hundreds of millions of dollars to stabilize that country when I'm 40 and I cannot afford to buy my own house yet?
Well, it's important that we act as though it's 1952 and there's the Marshall Plan. In other words, you have to aggrandize President Obama and Secretary of State Clinton and make them think that there's unlimited money so they can write checks. There's no other reason other than their own self-aggrandizement. But, you know, Mike, after this is all over, I would expect we're going to have 10 to 20,000 Libyan refugees, a good percentage of whom will no doubt be al-Qaeda coming into the country, very much like the Somali refugee nightmare that landed on our shores because of liberalism.
And we've given, and we've got four times as many Saudis coming here on student visas.
Well, we need more of them for diversity. Remember, diversity is more important than survival. See, if you're a liberal, what you do is you put your orthodoxy ahead of your sanity. And since there is no sanity left in the minds of most left-wingers, they continue to go to their doxies. And one of their doxies is that diversity and multiculturalism are very important at all costs. In fact, whatever the collateral damage may be, a bomb here, a bomb there, the World Trade Center is going up in flames, a bomb attack, a bomb attempt on George Bush's home, that's nothing. It's collateral damage for the bigger picture of diversity and multiculturalism. And you have to see the big picture in the left wing's mind and the war that they're conducting against the white man's hegemony. In fact, in South Florida right now, they have Islam Awareness Month. Did you know that? Islamic Awareness Month. They've learned from their brethren. We've just had a month of Black History Month, not Black History Day, mind you, but now we're going to get an Islamic History Month. What would happen if we had an American History Month? Or how about an American Awareness Month required for all of the people in this country who've been here less than a year, forcing them to attend America History Month or America Awareness Month? You think that would go over well, Mike?
What happened if we didn't have people like you and other conservatives like you? God bless you, and I hope you never...
Well, we won't be here much longer, I can guarantee you, unless we win this culture war that we're fighting. Unless we win this culture war we're fighting, Men like me will not be here. They'll turn us off. They're working around the clock right now to silence these voices, Mike, because we are the only opposition. We are the opposition to the Gaddafis of our country. Make no mistake about it. The people running this country are no different than Gaddafi. The only difference is they don't have absolute power yet. They are corrupt. They're dangerous. They're demonic. They just don't have absolute power, comma, yet, period. I'll be right back.
Savage.
The world's burning and Obama's celebrating Motown music. It's a Rock and Roll Friday on the Savage Nation. We may as well have some fun. Let's go to the callers. Dean in Portland, Oregon, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.
I was hoping that you would discuss your novel a little bit more that you were talking about a couple days ago. I think I would find that fascinating. If you're as articulate in your fiction writing as you are on the radio, that should be exceptional.
On Monday, which was an off day because people were away, all the government workers were away, they had a, you know, they needed a day of rest. As you know, President's Day is a federal holiday because they work so hard in the federal government, they need to rest. I played I did a very special show, and I read from my forthcoming novel, Abuse of Power, some of the writings. You know what? It was one of the best shows I've ever done. I did it for my regular listeners. I have a little segment from it. We're going to play it right now. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I love my baby, my heart and soul. Love like eyes I won't never go.
Welcome to Cafe Savage. You're listening to Stevie Ray Vaughan, Pride and Joy. Couldn't find any Johnny Nitro to download. Of course, Stevie Ray Vaughan set the stage for so many great musicians. So you heard where I'm coming from today. I'm not going to do, I'll do politics later, but everything's political at the end of the day. That's the thing to remember. So let me go back to a few other things. So I'm going to tell you about something. I'm at the Young Museum looking at Olmec, colossal masterworks of ancient Mexico, 100 objects from Mexican national collections and loans from 25 other museums, and the colossal heads, which you've probably seen pictures of, right? Now, you look at the dates on these, 200, 300 BC. You're standing an inch away from it. You got your nose an inch away from the stone. The mica chips are literally there, okay? You can almost smell the mica chips. And you say to yourself, this was one of the advanced civilizations of its time. They're all gone. Where are they now? What happened to them? What happened to the Mayan culture? What happened to the Aztec culture? Where did they go? And you start saying 500 BC, 400 BC, 300 BC. And you look at this country, a couple of hundred years. This republic has lasted. The Roman Empire lasted longer. Where is it today? Where is the Roman Empire today? It's gone, long gone. I mean, the Romans are still around. We know that. Elements of the Roman Empire are still around. There are great aqueducts, for example, some of the roads, and so many other great constructs. But the point is, their civilization collapsed. All civilizations have a lifespan, just as do humans. You know this, right? So what's new about me talking about it? In a sense, nothing. Any educated person who went to college has heard all of this before, so there's nothing new about it. But I think that in the world we live in, with this instant communication, with the web and with the internet, we forget that we're part of a continuum. Humanity is part of a continuum. We had a mother, we had a father, we had a grandmother, grandfather. We had great-grandfathers and great-grandmothers, etc., and so on, ad infinitum, back to the beginning, and so forth, forward. And so, therefore, we're only one piece of this long tapestry of the human genome, if you want to put it in those terms. What do you do with your life? What does it mean? Do we have a special meaning? You start. I mean, if you go in a museum and you start asking these questions, it's the equivalent of going into a church and getting struck and starting to ask the eternal question. Now, how many of you really go into church and are even moved by the preacher anymore? If you are, good for you and good for him. That's the object of a church. It's the object of a synagogue. They're supposed to move you to these questions. They're supposed to teach you to be awed by life. And if the rabbi or the preacher can't give you a sense of awe, then it's just a social group as far as I'm concerned. So I've got to find it where I got to find it. That's why I'm always in a quest situation. But after looking at those stone heads from 200 BC, I said, you know what? That stonehead don't talk, Johnson, and that stonehead don't feel. I still talk, and I still feel. I can feel pleasure. I can feel pain. I can feel anger. I can feel joy. I can feel elation. I can feel warmth, etc. And so on. Just go up and down the emotions. So I said, you can only feel that when you're alive, so you better live while you die. You know what I mean? You must start singing the Frankie Lane song. Maybe I'm feeling it, okay? Maybe I'm finally now feeling that approaching time. I don't know what it is, but I know that I want to reach out and live more than I have in the past couple of reclusive years. I don't know what it is, but something in me wanted to reach back out. So anyway, after the museum of looking at the Stoneheads, I jump in the car. It's in the rain. And I go across this beautiful city on a gray, rainy day on my own. And I'm looking at the University of San Francisco, which is a Catholic university. And you see the beautiful construction and you see the towers again. I'm going to get to the towers for a minute. And you see the bell towers. And you see the bell towers of the university. And you say, wow, they're beautiful, right? So I race over to Alioto's. And I'm sitting there with a friend of mine, Jack, and I'm sitting at Alioto's, and I want to read you a paragraph. Now, remember, two of my characters are Tony and Jack. I'm going to read you one paragraph that I wrote when I came back. Sitting at Alioto's, Jack looked over at Ghirardelli Square and saw the spire that looked like it arose from a church, and he said to Tony, Tony, look over at Ghirardelli's tower. Do you realize that almost all of the spires and bell towers that we see are based on Giotto's campanile? Our own tower at Berkeley, the campanile, built in the early 1900s, is basically a derivation of Giotto's bell tower built in the 1300s. It just shows you what Western civilization is and how important it is to the world and what its derivatives are. Look what Florentine Gothic architecture has given the world, Tony. What are the derivatives of this generation, Tony? He bellowed in the restaurant after his third glass of wine. What are the derivatives of a website? Tell me what are the derivatives and what will they be of our media gibberish and of meaningless music, Tony? What are the derivatives of atheism, Tony? Jack said. That's a good paragraph. It's what I wanted to say. It doesn't matter whether it's approved by you or by a college teacher of English. All that matters to me is that I wrote exactly what I wanted to say, and I think I communicated the exact emotion that I had at that moment through my character.
Savage.
Yeah, so the American children are still celebrating Ski Week, a national holiday. That's why we're number 75th in math and science. But the children can probably go to NYU Film School and make pornography. They can probably design a website. Again, probably sort of a soft porn website for some corporation when they get out of college. They won't have a job, but think of the self-fulfillment. The important thing is that they feel fulfilled. It's the Dr. Spock School of University today. Chinese are number one in math and science. No ski weeks in China. They're learning how to do calculus in the fourth grade. But our children are learning how to ski because they have to be fulfilled. They must feel fulfilled this week. That's the liberal credo, is make sure that the children are never stressed. They don't want to feel any stress. They should always be fulfilled. If they feel any pain at all, maybe arrest the parents, because you've got to look into the parents, the dysfunctional parents. That's all. Nation of skiers and web designers. And that's the story. And comes to a war. The Navy couldn't be found anyway. They were doing diversity training. Comes to rescuing American citizens in Libya. Whatever happened from the halls of Montezuma to the shores of Tripoli? The halls of Montezuma are the drug gangs in Mexico. The shores of Tripoli are landing the Marines and killing Gaddafi and his henchmen and liberating the Libyan people and then seizing the oil fields. That's what a military is for, national security. Right now, oil is in our national security. It'll destroy the economy. Kill him, kill his henchmen, give liberation to the people, and seize the oil. That's all. What are we sitting here? What's the use of a military under Admiral Mullen and Commander Obama? Play the Marine Corps hymn. That's what I want to hear from them, because that's in the Marine Corps hymn. From the halls of Montezuma. It's Montezuma, by the way. You got to get that C in there. The shores of Tripoli. What do you think it was about? Do you think it's a song? It's to stir men up to go out and conquer the enemy, subdue them, take their natural resources. National security, Jack. Forget political correctness. National survival requires that we seize the oil fields. That's all. What do you think? We should have had a war for oil. Let's stop for a minute. Let's discuss this for a minute. We wasted over $1 trillion or $3 trillion in Iraq, liberated 24 million ungrateful Shia who were oppressed by the Sunni Saddam Hussein. And you know what we got in return? The middle finger from the nasty Shia of Iraq. They didn't give us a barrel of oil. The first lease of oil rights in Iraq were given to the Chinese. You hear this? Have you ever heard of a moronic country like this? Bush, then Obama. There's nothing left. There's nothing left here. After 8 years of Clinton and 8 years of Bush, you know what we have now? Celebrating Motown. That's all. That's what we got left. But what was the point of the war in Iraq? It should have been a war for oil. The liberals said no war for oil. Well, we went to war, but we didn't get anything. We got a war and no oil. I would say since so many men sacrificed so much for this country, in national security interests, we should have had oil for it to at least give us reparations for liberating the ungrateful Shia. But no, nothing. Zero. Well, you say, well, why? Because we're stupid and weak? Nah, don't be stupid. It's because the Seven Sister Oil Companies want the cartel to control the price of oil. Don't be a schmuck. Of course there's no oil after the war. It was to make sure that oil, the gas is $10 a gallon, you know, during Motown's administration. That's all. That's all. $10 a gallon. What are you going to do about it? What are you going to put in there? Banana peels? You're gonna put methane gas into your gas tank? They got you over a barrel. This is a repeat of history all over. Remember Jimmy Carter, the gas lines? Same thing. Every time there's a weak liberal in power, the gas lines are longer. It's like the liberal quotient that I talked about yesterday. As the derriere goes down, the liberal quotient goes up in the women. Did you remember that one? I was trying to work on it. I was bored in the middle of the night. The LD, the higher the LD, the higher the, no, the higher the derriere quote, the lower the derriere, the higher the liberal quotient, the higher the LQ. So you go, now the reverse is true for the so-called fake conservatives, like the type who joined like the Group of Abe or something in Hollywood where I'm not allowed to appear. Real conservatives never appear there. It's for the, so the lower the career, the lower the LQ, the lower the LC in Hollywood. In other words, once their careers are on the wane, the higher the conservative quotient, because they can't go to the liberals anymore. They ran through them. Think about what I'm saying to you. In other words, the actors who suddenly come out as conservatives, they're basically has-beens or would-bes. But they've already run through all the liberals they knew, and they got nowhere. They had their day in the sun. So now they got to work the conservative side of Hollywood. So now they're suddenly, you know what I'm saying? Does that make sense to you? Is the equivalent of the other thing. It was like Goldie Hawn out of Grange. Like you looked at her, I told you, when she was young, she was gasp good-looking. And then And like Susan Sarandon was reasonably good looking. And the uglier she got and the more she sagged, the higher the liberal quotient went up. So on the other side of the aisle is the worse their careers, the more their careers collapse, the higher the conservative quotient goes up. The CQ, and they join the Friends of Abe. And Zelig then takes them in. And Zelig, we gave Zelig an honorary name today for those of you who know what I'm talking about. We've given a name, Bart Zelig, for those of you who wanted the special inside name. Anyone who knows who Bart Zelig is, don't call the show. I've given someone in Hollywood a name, Bart Zelig. Wherever there's a crisis, he is like the Jesse Jackson of the conservative side. There he is. He's the outside agitator of the conservative side. Bart Zelig appears everywhere. Wherever you look, there's Bart Zelig. 1-800-449-825. I'm having a good time. It's Friday. Give me a break. I need to let off some steam. If I was a normal person, I wouldn't even be on the radio on Friday. I would be sleeping right now. I'd have a nap this afternoon. See, let's say I left radio, what would I have done this afternoon? I'm exhausted. I would have taken a nap, as I did for about 20 years, and then I would get up, do a mild bit of exercise. I'd walk to the bathroom. Then I would walk down to the nearest cafe and have a couple of glasses of wine because it would be dark soon here. And it's supposed to snow here in San Francisco tonight. I don't think it will. Who knows? The prediction was way off. There's no snow. It's no snow. There's snow coming Friday. Maybe it will. Maybe it won't. Right now it's sunny and cold. It's sunny and cold. Where's the snow? I hope there is snow. I'm dying to see snow. I got my camera battery. I'm charging it up. The last time I saw snow was like 1979 down here, and the kids played in the snow. They were young. They were babies then. Look at this. Look what went. Don't start in with the, because I know the next time as I will, I'll be up in heaven looking. There'll be no snow on the ground. I won't be here to feel it. I'll be in an Olmec statue or carving by that point. But with the snow. I like the snow. I'm a guy who loves snow in theory. You're not like an armchair like skier. I don't really like the cold that much. I know something. I hate the heat. I hate it. I die. personally, I don't like summers. I don't like Florida for that reason. I can't take sun. I don't like melting down. I don't like walking around with my knees exposed. Anywhere where my knees have to be exposed, I don't want to be. Let's put it to you that way. Maybe there's Eskimo blood. I don't know. I got the genome thing back. What a ripoff. I sent the saliva in for $399. What a ripoff this is. I could read the company's name, but I don't really need to, you know, bash the company. I wouldn't recommend that you spit in a jar and send in $400 to find out what you're going to die from. I sent my saliva sample, and it took 3 months to get my genotyping analysis back. Folks, I have a PhD from the University of California in epidemiology and nutrition. I couldn't make heads or tails of it. Told me that you have a statistical chance of not getting breast cancer. That was what I got out of it. You have a statistical chance of not getting breast cancer, I learned. That was very important for $400. So I figured, all right, so let's see who I come from. I figured maybe it'll explain why I don't like the heat. Maybe I derive from Finns or somewhere, like Laplanders. You know, as a kid, I was always drawn to, like, northern Finland. I always liked, like, the yak. I liked the yak as an animal. And I liked the huts they lived in. I liked the idea of them on the ice, something near the Eskimo, but not exactly Eskimos. I never wanted to be an Eskimo. I wanted to be near the Eskimos. I liked the idea of the cold, dark winter, but I would like a city with electric lights. So I figured Helsinki would work. So I was hoping that when I got the analysis back, it would say that you have some drop of Finnish blood. That at some point a Finnish warrior came into the village and, you know, had his way with one of your female ancestors. And that explains why you hate Florida. It didn't happen, though. I got it back, and my genotyping analysis kit came back, and there's nothing in it. I'm still searching for any bit of information. It says you have a statistical chance of not getting breast cancer. And I looked at other illnesses. It says you have a statistical chance of not getting this, but you have a high probability of getting that. My mother-in-law could have told me the same thing based upon what happened in the family. Who are these people fooling? And by the way, I'm going to look into it a little bit more. All I can say to you is don't go for that genotype thing on the web with where you put saliva in a jar and sit. You sit and wait like you are not going to die from you. It doesn't come back like that. And trust me, I know statistics well enough to know what probability is. You have a 1.2 chance of not getting breast cancer, but you have a 0.8 chance of getting colorectal experiences after taking vitamins. What does this mean? Please explain it to me. Who were my ancestors? Then you look at the bottom, you got the stalkers already on the page. ME90305060602 wants to meet you. Already a stalker found that your blood type, your spit matched his spit already. He's looking to meet you. Are you crazy? Am I going to send my data to some lunatic who wants to meet me because of saliva in a jar? You know, this is getting crazier by the day. I personally think it's a government plot to get your genome on file so they can use it against you. Forget about iris technology. I think this is the government wanting to get your spit on file. That's why I don't want to talk about Gaddafi. Give me a break. So what I'm going to do at this point is we have a couple of minutes to fire back to the Monday segment where I ended off with my reading from Tony and Jack in my forthcoming novel from St. Martin's. Oh, I can't wait to make the liberals mad. When my book comes out this summer or in September from St. Martin's, I know the book's going to be a raging bestseller, Abuse of Power, because it's loosely based upon my being banned in Britain. It's super. It's incredible. It has the San Francisco scenes that only I know in it. And the liberals are going to ignore it or they're going to bash it and it's going to sell like crazy. And the more they ignore it, the bigger it's going to get. It's going to be bigger than Jack London. Let's go back to segment 3 from The Savage Nation. All that matters to me is that I wrote exactly what I wanted to say, and I think I communicated the exact emotion that I had at that moment through my character. Do you understand what literature is? Literature is expressing yourself. Literature is not appeasing the schmucks at the universities who can't write themselves, in my opinion. So that's one paragraph. And then there's a lot more I can tell you about San Francisco, but I'm telling you that when my forthcoming novel, Abuse of Power, comes out, which is a very heavy political book, incidentally, make no mistake about it. It is loosely based upon my being banned in Britain, being screwed by people in my own government and the government of England, people I trusted. And it's going to be one of the biggest books of the year. It will surpass On the Road. It will beat Dharma Bums in its depiction of San Francisco and the Bay in particular. And only Jack London will be left standing for me to top. That's my statement. I really don't care who agrees with me. Don't you understand? I don't need them to say he's right or he's wrong. When I watch fights, which I do all the time on Showtime, I love to watch Ultimate Fighting. I'm not an Ultimate Fighter. These guys are in a world of their own. I've never seen anything like it. These are the gladiators of our times. Boxing is one thing, but you see guys are so strong, it's hard to believe. It looks like it could fall out of a building and survive. How powerful men could be in terms of the punishment they can inflict and take on each other. And you watch this. You realize that the guy has to amp himself up to get into that ring. And now you see guys so evenly matched. And both of them think God loves them. Both of them think God is on their side. And both of them go in to destroy the other man without hating him. And they will fight until they destroy the other man, believe me. And when they'll say to you, before they get in that ring, I'm going to beat him and there's only going to be X for me to take down. Well, that's how I feel about my writing. That's how I feel about my book. And it's up to me to feel it, not for you to tell me what I'm supposed to feel. That's how I see it anyway. So we've touched on the Olmec Stoneheads at the museum. I've touched on scenes, one anyway, from my forthcoming novel, Abuse of Power. And therefore, now it is time for a call or two. 1-800-449-8255. Here's a great call out of the blue. You'll never believe this one. Bob in Florida, thank you for listening. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, Michael, I was really saddened today to hear the news about Johnny Nitro. I was fortunate enough to have been in the saloon when I go to San Francisco. I plan my trip so Friday night I could be there. And I'm also a bass player and cut a few CDs. And Johnny would see me and ask me to sit in with him and his wife, Sylvia Blue, the saxophone. And I'm telling you, that bar was the real deal. And he was.
I know. Hey, Bob, let me ask you something. Isn't this odd? The left-wing freaks in San Francisco think they own the culture. And they assume that every musician, every artist is a communist. It's not true by any means, is it, Bob?
I mean, the bartender, Artie, he looks like he was a former prize fighter. That guy could have been a cop in Brooklyn. He didn't take any guff from anybody. That bar was just the real deal. You could be in a suit or a blue jean, and Johnny delivered a good time.
Yeah, he was something. The times I've seen him, listen to what he said. I love the line, keep drinking triples till you're seeing double, feeling single and getting in trouble. Now, of course, that's what got him in at the end. That's the old North Beach days when everybody was into the heavy drinking. That goes back to when writers thought they had to be drunks in order to be good writers. But unfortunately, a lot of people followed that advice. He also said, and please, at the end of the show, please, please, after the show, if you're going to be driving, please be sure you've got a car or a truck or a motorcycle or something. I mean, which is very funny, by the way.
Well, he would say, if you had too much, have two more.
But, yeah, and remember, he said, when you've had too many, have two more just to be on the safe side. I mean, but no one does that anymore. Bob, the day of the heavy drinking is over, isn't it? I mean, no one can live like that.
Well, I believe that a double Jameson is the holy water myself.
I was in a bar. It's funny. I was in a bar the other night. That's not my favorite scotch. Mine is something else. I don't want to mention the brand, but all they have, frankly, is this Jameson. So I had a Jameson 18. Do you know what they charged me in Sausalito, California for a Jameson 18? Take a guess.
The Jameson 18, because they usually pour a double, probably $14.
$29.
That's ouch.
I have paid less for a 5-course dinner in North Beach with a half a liter of wine than what they ripped me off for in Sausalito. It was a shocker. I didn't complain because, you know, I asked for it, right? So I just put down the card. But I was shocked. It's generally why I don't drink scotch in a bar.
Actually, Jameson is Irish. It's made in the Catholic section of Ireland, and Bushmills is made in the Protestant section of Northern Ireland.
I used to drink Bushmills when I was poor, so I guess I moved up in the world. Well, I like single malt scotch. I have one. I never get a headache from it. I must tell you, Jameson's left me with a little mild, a tiny little mild, you know, residual. I don't see the reason I don't drink anymore, Bob, really beyond one or two, is I don't like the headaches and hangovers. It's just not worth it.
Savage.
It is amazing what's going on in the world. You talk about art, you talk about freedom of expression, and I got to tell you, the Democrats are the fascists of our time. You say, come on, wait a minute, how'd you make that leap? Representative Anthony Weiner in New York wants a statue removed in Queens because he said it's sexist. What is this statue? It's been there for decades. It's of a semi-nude gladiator with a sword entitled Triumph of Civic Virtue. It's near Borough Hall in Queens, New York, Queens Boulevard and Union Turnpike, I believe, up there. And he doesn't like it because it's of a man standing on a harlot. And it's entitled Triumph of Civic Virtue. And here's a radical left-wing whack job, Anthony Weiner, says the statue does not represent civic virtue. It is sexist, and he wants it removed from New York City. He says it's sexist and offensive and should have gone a long time ago. Now, here's an example of a left-wing atheist, so far as I can tell, who is wanting to get rid of a piece of art history and a piece of New York City's art history at that. But because it features a nude muscle man holding a sword behind his head, standing atop two bare-chested mermaids who look more like Medusa than Ariel, slithering at his feet. And it's meant to portray civic virtue, triumphing over vice and corruption. But Anthony Weiner wants to censor this piece of art because his liberal Democrat sensitivities are offended by it. Here you go again, censorship coming not from the Christian conservative, but from the atheist liberal, in this case, Weiner. And he says, this is not about art. It's a question of whether it should be on display. Now, I want to ask you, this is, what if it was John Ashcroft saying that a certain statue should be covered with a cloth because it offended him? Tell me about the guffaws that would come out of the newsrooms run by the vermin. But now, because a liberal atheist named Weiner says that the statue of a male conquering vice is sexist, what, they're cheering him on? Don't you see what I'm saying to you? This is what a congressman is doing? He's not looking into Islamofascism right in his own neighborhood? Said he's worried about a statue in Queens? I think he's just jealous he doesn't look like the statue. That's my personal opinion. I think he can't stand the statue because it reminds him of who he is.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Gentlemen, give it up for Motown.
Get up, get on up, stay on the scene. Get on up like a sex machine. Get on up, get up, get on up, get up, get on up, stay on the scene. Get on up like a sex machine. Get on up, get up, get on up, stay on the scene.
You want that hope and change? You got it. You want the hope and change? You want the new White House? Here it is. The world's on fire, and he's celebrating Motown. That's all. What could be better? It's nice to be oblivious. Nice to be oblivious. And I will give children to be their princes, and babes shall rule over them. And the people shall oppress one another, every man his fellow and every man his neighbor. The child shall behave insolently against the aged, and the base against the honorable. For a man shall take hold of his brother of the house of his father. Thou hast a mantle, be thou our ruler. And let this ruin be under thy hand. Well, there it is. You don't believe in this stuff. You're an atheist, so you don't believe in the Bible. But here it is. We're living the Bible. We're living the Bible, Isaiah said. And I will give children to be their princes, and babes shall rule over them. Now play the president again. Tell me it doesn't fit.
Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for Motown.
That's all. I will give children to be their princes, and babes shall rule over them. That's all. What more do you want? A babe is their master. As for my people, a babe is their master, and women rule over them. That's Isaiah 3.12. And I'm not a biblical guy. I just have a Bible with about 500 post-its in it. I think when I go to the across the river, you imagine when I can auction this off for with the Michael Savage's personal Bible with the Post-its in it, and the money goes to some scholarship fund. That would be a big, that'd be a big thing on eBay. I get a lot of money for that one. There is nothing better for a man that he should eat and drink and make his soul enjoy pleasure for his labor. This also I saw that is from the hand of God. See, God tells you that. That's the thing about Jewishness. It's a lusty religion, number one, and it's also fundamentally connected to the body. This is something good about that. There's nothing better for a man than that he should eat and drink and make his soul enjoy pleasure for his labor. This also I saw that it is from the hand of God. For who will eat or who will enjoy if not I? This is again from Ecclesiastes. For to the man that is good in his, etc., you got the picture. Enjoy it, in other words. Then, of course, I could get into everything. There was a season and a time to every purpose under the heaven, because today is Friday, and on Friday I generally do religion and philosophy. And boy, if we're not living through times that are tumultuous, where people are terrified of the baby in the White House, or shall we say the babe in the White House, who sets the world on fire and then goes a-dancing. You want to play Turn, Turn, Turn by the Birds? Because that fits right here. You can sing along. To die, time to plant, time to kill, whoa, stop right there. A time to kill and a time to heal. We have to eliminate this. We have to burn the Bible. We have to take Ecclesiastes and set it afire. All good Americans are now to report to their local police station with the Bible and make certain that they throw it into the fire, because it's so politically incorrect. It is so awful. It says this is a time to kill and a time to heal. That's not good. A time to love and a time to hate. Hating is bad. The children today are taught not to hit back. And that's why you can be stepped on by a third world nation that comes in here and steps on you and brainwashes your children. Play your turn again before I say something I regret. Go ahead.
A time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, a time to reap, a time to kill, a time to heal, a time to laugh, a time to weep.
Time to weep? Ooh.
To everything.
Take a pill. Take a psychiatric med.
There is a season, turn, 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 and a time to every purpose under heaven.
Here it comes.
A time to build up, a time to break down, a time to dance, a time to mourn, a time to cast away stones, a time to gather stones.
In a minute.
Let's
see where I'm going with
this. A time of love, a time of hate, a time of war, a time of peace.
Okay, let's stop right there. A time to love, a time to hate, a time for war, and a time for peace. We're at war, and we have a babe running America. We have nation after nation declaring war on us. We have one nation after another spitting on us. We have a Navy turned into a diversity training vehicle. We have an Air Force that's been grounded. We have a military that's been told to take gay training on the battlefield. And we have a man celebrating Motown while all this is going on. Ladies and gentlemen, do you have any idea what I'm saying to you? I hope you do. I really hope you do, because I don't know whether we can survive two more years of this. And I tell you again, maybe this is the question of the day. Let's stumble right into the question of the day on the Savage Nation. It's late on a Friday. Many of you don't want to get too agitated. Many of you, though, are very agitated seeing the world on fire. People cannot believe this man set the world on fire, and now he's dancing to Motown. And make no mistake about it, this is not a spontaneous revolution going on in the Arab world. Oh, no. Oh, no. The evidence is quite clear. As I put together in a 16-page essay, which I posted on Michael Savage 2 weeks ago when Egypt was burning, it was Jimmy Carter. First of all, I think it goes back to George Soros. That's the best I could figure out, because he has a group that he put together, which includes Zbigniew Brzezinski, okay? Zbigniew Brzezinski, you know who that character is, the former national security advisor under James Carter, the peanut farmer. So you have the Soros, Brzezinski, Carter, Obama connection, and now you have the Middle East on fire. Now, did they do it because they want to see the world burn? I doubt it. couple of reasons they did it. They did it because, A, profit. They want to make sure they can make money going up and going down. Someone's making money off this. You make no mistake about it. Just as I was right about the cause of the financial collapse, it came out 2 weeks ago, the so-called commission. It told you it was orchestrated. The SEC looked the other day. We looked the other way. We just heard the other day that the head of the ACC, the top lawyer, took a job in one of the major law firms. The very same SEC lawyer just made $1.2 million in profits, which is chicken feed compared to what was really made, while this was going on off his mother's Madoff fund. So the point they're making is the Bush administration was just as complicit in the meltdown, and it was, the, in my opinion, the man who really should have been indicted by now and investigated. We have no reason to prove that he did this, but he should be investigated simply because he was the head of the SEC at the time, Chris Cox. You don't hear from him. Where is he? Republican, golden-haired boy appointed by Bush, was running the SEC. He did nothing while all of this went on. At the very least, it's incompetence, something, responsibility, no. And then you got Hank Paulson, Treasury Secretary, had come over from Goldman Sachs. Again, no investigation, nothing, zero. So people made billions of dollars off the collapse. They milked you of your 401k, melted down companies, destroyed corporations, destroyed the economy in order to panic you into voting for this unknown named Obama because you figured he's hopeful and he's going to be different than the corrupt white men. Let's be clear, okay? That was like chalk on a blackboard, what I just said to you. It was like, oh, God, he's right. That was the scam. What, do you think they're stupid? Okay, run this guy. He looks, okay, looks good, Harvard. Harvard Law, we don't know anything about him. We don't know where he went, whatever. We're born, that doesn't matter. Where he's born, doesn't matter. He looks clean cut, and he looks like he could do the job, and he's not one of those evil, corrupt white men. So we thought, here he is, boom, more corrupt, more incompetent than ever. More corruption, more incompetence than ever. More extra legal maneuvers than ever. More power grabs than ever. And he's getting down with Motown. That's all. So here we are, and now we come to today. Now we come to today. Now we have the next major league event going on right in front of our eyes. I was right. What I'm saying to you is I called it like it is in trickle-up poverty. I spent chapters on it explaining how I thought that the meltdown occurred. I named names. I named the Managed Funds Association. I talked about the hedge fund operators who I think did this, none of whom have been indicted, by the way, by our esteemed federal government. So now I'm telling you what I think, one man's opinion, is going on in the Middle East. Don't you want my opinion? Isn't that why you listen to the show every day? It's not to laugh. Sure you want to laugh, but you also want an informed opinion. I gave you my informed opinion. This was orchestrated by that group that I just told you for their socialist reasons. They want a worldwide socialist one-world government, and they got to break it. They need, in order to make an omelet, you got to break a few eggs. In this case, the eggs are, name them, okay, Egypt, Libya, whoever goes next. That's part of their Marxian omelet. The one thorn in their side, as named by George Soros, is Israel. He said they're the main problem in the Middle East. George Soros, allegedly of Jewish ancestry, allegedly a Holocaust survivor, was blaming Israel as a thorn in the side of peace in the Middle East. George Soros said that, not me. So who's the anti-Semite? That's what you got to ask your question. Everyone's afraid of the word. I'm not afraid of it because I know who I am and I know who they are. And so therefore, I'm going to tell you how I see it. So, A, they're doing it to make a new world order out of the world. That's number one. And number two, they're making a little money on the side. It's like, so it's like the missionaries, it was said, went to Hawaii in the early 1850-60 era. And they said the missionaries went there to do good, and they did very well indeed. That's what Hawaiian people would say to you with a joke. What do they mean by that? The missionaries went there, to do good. They gave the mumbo jumbo to the Hawaiians. Took them away from their false idols, introduced Christianity, and the side took a little land here and there, a couple like all the islands. That's all. It did good and did very well indeed. See, you have it both ways that way. So the descendants of the missionaries now, they're sitting like pigs in heaven, living off of the proceeds of their great-great-grandfather priest who went over there and stole the land from the Hawaiians, and they did good and did very well indeed. So it's the same thing here. These good liberals want to do good in the world, and they're doing very well indeed. Now, can we prove it? Can we actually prove that someone made money on the Egyptian currency just before betting against it? And then they made more when they knew it would end immediately and the Egyptian currency would be back in power again? When they knew the banks would reopen, they would just happen to, you know, sell long at that time? No, we can't prove that yet. In fact, you can never prove it because we have a corrupt SEC. If we had an uncorrupt SEC, they'd be looking right now at who made money off Egypt and who's making money in the Libyan currency. And by the way, who speculated on oil before Libya got into this turmoil? Which hedge fund went into oil short? Who shorted and who longed oil and when? That's what you do in a legitimate country. You talk about controls. That's what you do in a legitimate nation. But since we're now less than a banana republic, we're a website republic, we have nobody to turn to but ourselves. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It's an interesting story. An Iceman. They found an Iceman, a well-preserved 5,300-year-old mummy, sometimes lovingly called Frozen Frit. And he was recreated by Dutch forensic experts. And you know what's shocking is it looks like me after a bad night on the town. I swear to God. Artists recreate the face of Otzi, a 5,300-year-old Iceman mummy. This could explain my aversion to heat and to the tropics. Did you see that picture yet on my website? They say Ozzy was, yeah, according to Discovery News, Otzi was about 5'3" tall. I'm taller than that. But that was a long time ago. He weighed 110 pounds, not bad, but they didn't have, you know, pasta in those days. A new model of him will go on display beginning March 1st to January 15th in the South Tyrol Museum of Archaeology in Bolzano, Italy. The body of the Iceman was discovered in 1991 by accident by German tourists and made headlines around the world. At first, he was thought to have died recently. Since then, the ancient mummy has undergone a slew of examinations for which signs of gleaned bismuth. Last steps in arranging from his last meal to the cause of his death. He probably ate in the Chinese restaurant that I ate in. The ancestors of the Chinese restaurant I ate in. The dim sum they fed me the other day would have knocked the mummy out. Would have knocked out an Iceman 5,300 years ago. What are they putting in that stuff these days? The quality of food, particularly the mixed food that you disguise with sauces, has gone so downhill it's frightening. Wherever I go, I'm talking about food for a minute. I slipped into it. I'm afraid now of restaurants where it's mumbo-jumbo food, which I've enjoyed for years, because the sauce is mainly China. You really want to eat shrimp from China? Do you really want to eat calamari from the fresh, clean waters off the coast of the South China Sea? How would you like? I mean, have you been reading what they're doing in China? That, what was it? The rice is contaminated coming out of China because the water they're using, the wetlands they use to grow rice, are polluted with industrial runoff. You know, I noticed at my local Japanese restaurant, which I've eaten in for years, the guy makes a nice meal, a cheap, quick, but I can't eat the rice. It smells. It has a weird smell. But he doesn't speak very good English, and they sold it to a new immigrant. He doesn't speak any English. So if I went in and nicely said, "What's going on with your rice? It smells bad," he wouldn't understand me. So I have no way to even ask. Now, look, I could send the rice to a laboratory and see what lead, cadmium, mercury is in it, but I'm not going to bother. In my old days, if I didn't have a radio show, I would have been a real troublemaker. I would have sent the rice to, like, the state laboratory. I would have come back in 12 years, probably with the same obscure results as my spittle came back from the genealogy laboratory. Like, there's a high probability, would have said, we've done the studies in the state laboratory, we've discovered that we don't know anything, but if you look carefully enough, we cannot prove definitively one way or the other whether or not there is any increased risk of any heavy metals. On the other hand, we should not then forewarn you that if you do eat it, there's no probability that you might not, in some cases, even from dyspepsia all the way up, and therefore, thank you very much, send in your money so we can go on vacation and get our pensions. That would be what I get out of the state laboratory. So you can't use it. You have to use an independent laboratory. It costs me $5,000 to find out what's in the rice. Do you understand that? I don't want to do it. The state should be looking into the rice that smells. I should be able to call up the state of California and ask them, okay, Japanese restaurant I'm eating and the rice stinks since the new owners took over. I think it's contaminated with cadmium because it's being grown in China. We have some of the best rice in the world here in Northern California. Do we sell it in California? The Sikhs went into the rice business here 100 years ago. They grow beautiful organic rice in Northern California. You think they serve that in the restaurants here? Probably eating rice from contaminated swamps in China.
Savage. We'll be right back. We bail out the billionaires. Right. February, cut low-income energy heat assistance, cut states workers, and cut Pell Grants. We've got to feed the roots, not just the leaves.
That's right.
Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for Motown.
Well, you had hope and you wanted change. This is what you got, just what you wanted. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Kevin in New York, you are on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind, Kevin?
Well, Michael, if democracy is supposed to represent the will of the people, then the ugly truth is, if they elect the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, then won't they have a more representative democracy than we have?
You mean in the sense that the American people oppose Obamacare by a large majority, for example, and the largest majority of Americans oppose most of the power grabs that Obama has conducted? Is that what you are referring to?
I am referring to that. And also, I asked the question, isn't democracy the rope that the West is ultimately going to hang itself with?
Well, of course it is. That's right. Well, you see, you have to understand the history of democracy. Democracy ultimately fails. Democracy requires a certain education, number one, and a certain commitment to a nation, number two. If you have 30 million people here who have an allegiance to another country, they wave their flags at sporting events that are not the American flag, they won't speak the language of the land, they don't respect the borders, the language, the culture, you can't have a democracy. What you have is what we have now, and that's how you have an illegitimate, unrepresentative government. That's how it arose. It's because we no longer have people with the allegiance to the nation and with the minimal education necessary to understand the requirements of a democracy. That's how we wound up with the imposter.
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. You can't add to that. You cannot add commentary to what's perfect. So there's no point in saying any more. A big mistake that many talk shows make is they make their point and it's cogent. And then they elaborate and it's horrible. That's all. What would you like to talk about on the Savage Nation? It's open mic to Mike. We've had a little fun today so far. We have any good rock and roll hanging out there? It should be Motown, though, truthfully, to keep in the spirit of the things with the president, because it is very important that we not be disrespectful to the highest office in the land. That's it. There you go. You want the chain. That's what you got in the White House now. You got this. You got Real Ho Wives of Beverly Hills on TV. What could be better? You got the lowest of the low in the popular media. Wherever you look, it gets lower by the second. You got half the legislators are on drugs. The other half are insane to begin with. This was a good song in its day, to be honest with you. Obama chartered boat too small to rescue stranded Americans. Chinese sent in a ship. He sent in a ferry. They couldn't go in the rough water. Navy nowhere to be seen. Diversity training. Birthing clinics at sea under Admiral Mullen. Unbelievable to me. Women on submarines. That's the next big move by Obama. Women on submarines. Now, it's not that women aren't brave, but you put a woman on a submarine, tell me what's going to happen. You got hundreds of men and four women. Tell me what's going to happen. Right away, lawsuits, diversity suits, education, the time spent instead of learning how to, like, track an enemy submarine, they'll learn how to not say anything to insult a woman in a tight pair of pants on the submarine, take out a torpedo tube, put in a lady's bathroom. That's what you mean by Obama rules. That's all. That's the democracy you're living in. So what else can we do today that we haven't done? Is there anything I haven't touched yet that could incite you, make you crazier than you already are, make your weekend even worse? Is there something that I have missed? What are you supposed to be focused on? Charlie Sheen? That was a great interview. That was terrific. That guy is really in control of himself, hiding in the Bahamas with hookers, porn stars, and he says he kicked the drugs and alcohol. He's got no problem. Well, that's what CBS needs for $1.2 million per episode. I am jealous. Imagine if I made $1.2 million per show. Do the math. I do 5 shows a week. That'd be like a lot of millions, $7 million a week. Okay, that adds up after a while. There, a couple of weeks, you got a lot of money there. That's $30 million a month times 12, take a month off for a vacation. Even that's like $400 million in radio. The equivalent pay for Charlie Sheen and talk radio would be $350 million a year contract. Nobody makes that in radio, no matter what you read, okay? Nobody makes the equivalent of Charlie Sheen. I guess we're not using the right medications. That would be the answer in the saloon if I had said that while Johnny Nitro was playing. If I had been drinking a little too much, I said, well, no one makes that kind of money in talk radio. The guy said, well, you ain't using the right drugs, brother. And you would have laughed because they were all, you know, you got to make humor. At a certain point, you got to have a little fun. We got any Johnny Nitro guy who died of a heart? They found him dead in his room above the saloon. You missed that show, man. Local blues musician died above the saloon. Calling me in the middle of a show. Very slow. Very slow. You know, they drink like vodka and juice all day. What a crowd. And what a crowd of ne'er-do-wells. Odd. I went by there the other day. The phone's driving me crazy. Must be someone calling for the dog. Teddy, tell your friends not to bother me during a show. They had a bouncer outside. This is where the guy died. Remember I told you, I was on a show Monday. I told you there's a local bar, the saloon, and Johnny Nitro was a great blues musician, died. He had all these alcoholic phrases that were very funny. He was a very talented, strong-willed guy. But, you know, eventually he died again from overusing exactly what he proposed. Like, drink triples till you see double and feeling single or get in trouble. Very funny, but if you do it, you wind up dead. That's all. You know, how long can you go on with that till your body gives out? Obviously, your mind gives out first. And you become a Democrat, then eventually your body follows. But the point is, I went by there like the other, not after he died, before, like 2 weeks ago, I was walking by, for old time's sake, in North Beach. They had a bouncer outside this place, like 6'8". He looked like a Scottish pole thrower. I didn't know white men could be that tall. I never saw anybody that big. Around 6'9", like some Viking. It's like the guy was the Iceman, came to North Beach. I never saw anything like this guy. I said, now that's the kind of guy I'd like to use as a bodyguard. But you know, the bodyguards today are not that big anymore. Did you hear about that? The top bodyguards are invisible. Did you know that? There's a little side note that you learn in the business of trying to learn everything about everything and trying to express yourself about everything. Sometimes you're right. In my case, 99% of the time, 1% you're wrong. But when you're wrong, you're very wrong. But it turns out that some high-powered people told me nobody uses these visible bodyguards anymore except, like, the slutolas in Hollywood who want to be seen, so they get big, you know, monster guys. It's not that they're bad bodyguards, but they're too visible. The really high-powered people use invisible bodyguards, like little guys. I don't mean like 5'1". I'm not talking about mini-me's. I'm talking about, like, smaller men who are experts in killing who are, like, circulating in the background, okay? You don't even know they're there. That's what they're using now. But the ones who use the big muscle and walk in, you know, I'm 6 feet, they're no one's into that except the slutolas who want to be seen or have like a reality show, you know. 1-800-449-8255. What do you want to talk about? Politics, humor, food, science, poetry, art, literature, the economy. Ugh, not the economy, please. Take my economy, please. Anything but the economy. That's Wednesdays anyway. I didn't do economy and money. I was doing it for a while because I had a guy on who lied to me. I don't even remember his name. We try to do reciprocity a little bit. I have very few guests. But if I get a guest on who has his own show, the thing is, okay, I'll have you on. You got to have me on. So the guy says, yes, I'll have you on the show. Someone from I forget where. Then after he gets on my show and blasts his new book, he tells my producer he don't want me on his show. You hear this? What was his name, Beowulf? Do you remember? Yeah, all right. Well, I think I'll name him next week. He's not even important enough to mention him. Just a slime ball, you know. So I don't have any many guests on anymore for that reason. The people want to use the show. What do I need to use them for? Friday's supposed to be religion and philosophy, which we did a little of today. You got to admit, we had a little religion. We talk about it, and babes shall rule over them. That's all. To everything there was a season. We did turn, Ecclesiastes. Everything. You know where that comes from? For all his vanity, it's Ecclesiastes. That's true for me and everybody else. Yea, they have all one breath, so that man hath no preeminence above a beast, for all is vanity. All go unto one place, all are of the dust, and all return to dust. Who knoweth the spirit of man, whether it goeth upward, and the spirit of the beast, whether it goeth downward to the earth? That's nice. That's what drives a man to drink, brothers, because at the end of the day, do you really want to wind up a stonehead in an Olmec exhibition in the museum? I don't. So, for that which befalleth the sons of man befalleth beasts, even one thing befalleth them, as the one dieth, so dieth the other. Yea, they all have one breath, so that man hath no preeminence above a beast, for all is vanity. What he's trying to say to you is be nice to your dog, as I can see it. But it was originated before there were pet dogs. It was to make sure that you didn't torture your cow or the camel, because they saw that there were some nice people who had beasts of burden, and they were bad people that beat their animal. So they were trying to instill some decency in man. They were trying to say, hey, be nice to that animal. Don't beat him. The animal feels like you do. He's going to, you'll like him in a way. You're all to dust. You know, he works for you. You know, give him his hay and leave him alone. Give him a day off. Because there were bad guys, like worked them 7 days, like, you know, like in China, they breed St. Bernards, and then they beat them to death with sticks, and then they eat them. Oh, yeah, still goes on. Not in the cities, of course. Not in Shanghai, where they have pets now, you know, Shatsu, Matsu, Hatsu, Latsu, Yotsu, Maitsu, Hisu, Thatsu, and everyone's advanced in the cities. They got the American money. They bought the little dog. But in the country, they're still basically like the ancestors were. They raised dogs in cages, beat them with sticks so they taste fresher, and then they cook them, including St. Bernards. And all of you schmuck left-wingers here in this country are worried about how we mistreat things in the country. Go take a look. You want to ban things, but you don't go to Chinatown, the live poultry market, because that might step on someone's toes, you lying weaklings, you. I would like to say to them if I could find them. New York City, WOR, Kevin, welcome to the program. You're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind, Kevin?
Mike, before you were talking about Congressman Wiener and he wants to tear down a statue in Queens?
Yes, because it's of a bold-looking warrior with a sword stepping on the vice figures of, like, harlots. Representative Anthony Wiener finds it sexist.
Well, he probably finds it offensive because he works across the street and the city neglected that statue for the last 2 decades. It was a gift from a European country. I can't remember which one. I worked.
No. It was originally in Manhattan, and Fiorello LaGuardia moved it to Queens. He banished it to Queens because he said he got tired of looking at its behind. It was outside City Hall or the official residence, so he didn't want it outside because he had to look at the statues behind, and I guess he had impulses that he had trouble with or something. I don't know why he kicked it out of Manhattan.
Well,
you know, Fiorello may have had a problem there. I don't know what he did. He actually said he got tired of looking at the statues of Derrier. So I'm saying, you know, maybe he had a little impulse control there. Who knows?
Well, the impulse has been to neglect it for the past 20 years because it's slowly.
Yeah, but some think that Anthony Wiener is showing the true sign of the liberal Democrat, which is censorship. Now, how do you feel? I mean, how about this? Why don't you just put a cloak over it since he finds it sexist? You know, everything they want to censor, but they claim they're liberals. How does that work? Thanks for the call. He's probably jealous of the figure. Because he doesn't look like him, that's all. What is the story that you would like to talk about? Indiana, Rick, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please. Fire away.
Hello, Dr. Savage. I just want to say my friend had told me about your show about a week and a half ago, and I turned you on. And I want to thank you. You've enlightened me. You've given me a sense of self, and I've started reading again, which I haven't picked up a book in 10 years. I know you'll probably chastise me for that, but, I mean, I'm not going to
chastise you for anything other than liberalism. It's the only thing I chastise on this show.
Oh, it's terrible. But I just wanted to call and say thank you for opening my mind, and I'm going to tell a lot more of my friends about you.
Well, Rick, let me send you a free copy of a really important book, Trickle Up Poverty. Read it, you know, at your leisure, because there's a lot in there. It'll tell you that Obama the Destroyer was actually put in office by very, very dangerous powers, and that is why the country is in such trouble right now. This is serious stuff, okay? But I want to stay, you know, on the high mood. Thank you very much for staying on the line, and we're going to get into the book and go out on Monday, and it arrives in the midst of the sports coming up and the Oscars soon, very important show, the American Again, Oscars, and now for the best and most important screenplay to do with all of the important issues of the day. Oscar, the big sleep show set to be void of pizzazz. Oh, Drudge has the leaked Oscar show. When is the Oscar show? Oscar show run. It's this Sunday? I want to be out of town. I want to be out of the country. I don't watch it. You know, it's so predictable. It's, you know, big deal. It's, to me, it's a trade show. It's like if you're a plumber. And you have the plumber of the year or the product of the year. They give out like a big lead pipe. That's what the Oscar looks like to me. Who's the host? James Franco. Never heard of him. Anne Hathaway. Don't know who it is. Who is James Franco and Jane Hathaway? I don't know who they are. Steven Spielberg will award the best picture. Hilary Swank and Catherine Bigelow will hand out best director. Host James Franco. Never heard of him. Anne Hathaway. Don't know who she is. Blah, blah, five wardrobe changes and open the show with one of those Billy Crystal, blah, blah, blah. A guest host will perform a monologue. Blah, 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 blah. I'm not going to watch it. Celine Dion will sing Smile. Maybe she could try the Star Spangled Banner in Swahili. I mean, what is she going to do? New writers will join. And for the best writer of the best documentary on cancer, we bring out Barry Rothenberg from Queens, New York. And then usually he wheels his mother out, and he thanks her, and she's in an old age home, and a picture of mom and dad who sent him to the High School of Performing Art. And if it wasn't for the High School of Performing Art and a city union that helped him when he was a child, if it wasn't for the unions of Manhattan, New York, who taught him how to play the piano when he was a child, he wouldn't be winning this award for the best composition for a documentary on cancer. And everyone sits there, and the camera pans, and they're the bored people, stoned out of their gourd. Then you all try to get into Mr. Chow's, the worst Chinese food in the world. I know I shouldn't say this. I know people who like it have great taste, but I got to tell you, I know Chinese food, and I know that is the worst. How they get away with it is because they can't. It's like a monopoly. It's like the oil cartel. It's a good place to see and be seen, but forget about it. I mean, sugar in the food, my God. One dish after another, it's like eating Kool-Aid. But very important people were there. Every major domo in Hollywood was sitting there. Everyone was looking to see who was at the other table. Old people have been eating there for 40 years and no one remembers. They still come in, they bow and they scrape. And there's Miss Nin at one point, 1951. She won the best award for the best dress ever used by a hooker on Sunset Boulevard. And she has the best table. She looks like an emaciated corpse from the movie Sunset Boulevard. And then in walks Rupert Murdoch. He did. He came in when I was there. One night I was there in my life. I've been there once. Rupert Murdoch came in and saw a big entourage around them, and there was the guy who runs Disneyland and turned it into a cesspool. I forget his name. With him was Barry Diller, who eventually invented the dill pickle. I don't know exactly what he did, but he's a big guy for Brooklyn. I think he invented the dill pickle. I'll be right.
Savage.
World's burning and Obama's celebrating Motown. We already covered that. Now we got the Oscars Sunday night to top it off. The world's on fire, and the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences will be shown in 200 countries around the world. The Arabs are rioting, burning their countries to the ground, and we're going to show the richest, most self-important people on the planet sitting here in tuxedos. That's our export product, and we're worshiping false idols on top of it all. That's really not offensive to the Muslim world. I mean, the entire religion is built upon not bowing down to false idols. The entire show, the Oscars are false idol, the golden idol. It's the opposite. You know what I'm saying? So now pipe it into Libya. Go ahead. Go pipe it into Egypt. Pipe it into the Arab countries and show them the product that we're exporting. That's the number one product of America. Is the false idol. It's astounding to me. If you actually look at things in context, what's going on? And boring? Ooh, God. Even as a child, when I had nothing else to do and I was like pre-sexual, I didn't like it. You know, as a kid when you're nine, you know, you're a captive audience in your house. You're sitting on a rug. And it's like it's the 50s. You watch whatever the parents put on. Even then, I got up and left. How about the biggest stoner in the history of Hollywood, Charlie Sheen? Hey, Chaim. Come on out. Chaim Sheen, come on out. Yeah, cut to a scantily dressed prostitute from the porn business. And the stage right is of a slut carrying a magnum of champagne and then against some drug dealer coming off on stage left. Yeah, Charlie Sheen, Chaim Sheen is going to come. Why don't they give an award to the best drug addict in Hollywood? I'm surprised they don't have one yet. Best stint in sex addiction. The best stint in sex addiction lasted over 5 minutes before going back to his ways. Will be the next Academy Award. This is like no business I know. Remember Milton Berle with the Texaco? I'll do a TV show on the web.
Everything the traffic will allow.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
We'll be right back. Well, we're still reeling here on the Savage Nation, looking at the antics, the murderous antics of Colonel Gadfly in Libya. Colonel Gadfly is killing the protesters. And our president and first lady got down with Motown at the height of the attempt to evacuate Americans. Turns out today the U.S. government chartered a boat too small to rescue stranded Americans. So it begs the question, where was the U.S. Navy? Well, the answer is simple. They were engaged in diversity training somewhere at sea, teaching people how to have babies at sea, taking lessons in diversity because they were nowhere to be found. So it's very serious. Gadfly militia opens fire on protesters. The opponents have seized control of the oil fields. Gadfly offers $400 per family as the rebels close in. The United Kingdom is paying bribes to free trapped citizens. The once British military is finished. And again, the U.S. government chartered a boat too small to rescue stranded Americans. Can you believe this? Gadfly says we can crush any enemy. Gingrich gives Obama impeachment warning. Okay, Newt, you're at it again. What else? Let's go to michaelsavage.com for the stories that made it to my website. Dems hiding in plain spite. Yep, there they are, in a dirty motel and an assistant. Can you believe that we come to a point in history that this would happen? Wisconsin Assembly bill takes away union rights. Dems erupt and shout, shame! Shame to the GOP as it passes the bill. Shame! Combat troops to get gay sensitivity training on the battlefield. Instead of waiting until they return home, Commander Obama has decided that he'll train them in the middle of a gunfight on how to be sensitive. Mid-Eastern Gulf by day of rage protests. Illinois becomes haven for demon cats on the run. Al-Qaeda offers aid to rebels in Libya. Gadfly says youth on hallucinogens blames protest on bin Laden. Well, that's a refreshing change. Vladimir Putin warns the West on North Africa democracy building. He seems to be the only leader in the world who understands what's going on because Obama was dancing while the Mideast burns. Oh, yeah, we got pictures of him getting down with Motown. Gadfly's son in hiding on a Venezuelan island, claimed by the British. Lobbyists, White House is sending meetings off-site to hide them. That's right, there's your transparency under Obama. New Soros investment fund hires top Obama energy aide. And by the way, you want to see the picture of the day, go to my website and take a look at Congressman David Wu wearing a tiger uniform. Nuts? No. Impossible. Minorities can't be crazy. Now, what if a Caucasian congressman sent a picture of himself dressed in a tiger uniform and sent it around to his constituents? They put him in a bughouse. But to a Democrat, it's different strokes for different folks.
Different stripes, I suppose.
An accused cleric says that weapons training for Muslims is Allah's will.
Wow.
Islam Awareness Month. Did you know about that? There's now Islam Awareness Month. After Black History Month, we now have Islam Awareness Month. And a controversial imam is speaking at the University of Central Florida. Controversial imam. Take a good look at his face. You don't need to see any more. One picture is worth 1,000 words. Go to the bottom of michaelsavage.com for all the news and more. The pictures you can't get anywhere else. This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
We could talk about the Middle East till we're blue in the face, but as you well know, our commander-in-chief, the weakest in American history, has been silent about the four dead Americans aboard the yacht. You know, old people in their 50s, 60s. According to a pirate, they were crying when they were captured. And they said, well, the pirates, as you well know, the left wing is saying that the reason they were killed was because they're handing out Bibles. That's, again, an example of the vermin in the media. Because although the Adams who were killed did hand out Bibles, a pirate told the AP that the Bible giving had no factor whatsoever in their death. They said the pirates killed them after the U.S. forces blocked the yacht's path. Now, he said the hostages pleaded with us not to harm them or take them to dangerous places. They cried when we captured them and asked us to release them because they were too old and couldn't endure captivity. Now, the pimps in Somalia who are doing this are now total absolute terrorist criminals, and they have now ramped up their game. They're now systematically torturing hostages, including locking them in freezers. And because the pirates have gotten away with virtual murder because of the weakness of the European Union and of America, they've gotten so fat on their winnings that they're amping it up now, and now they're loading on more ammo and more men to their ships after four U.S. deaths. In fact, this just came out. Pirates in Somalia said today they are ferrying ammunition and men to the 30 hijacked vessels still under their control, and they threatened to kill more captives following the violent end to a hostage standoff that left four Americans dead. There's only one answer, is you don't send our military to the ships that they're holding. You don't do that. You go to the town that the pirates come from. Where's the strategic thinking from the commander-in-chief? They all come from the same clan. We know the town that they come from. The town is called EYL in Somalia. They even have special restaurants that have been set up to prepare food for the crews of the hijacked ships in this town. This town in Somalia is a safe haven where nothing is being done to stop the pirates. In fact, in this administration in that town, there's links to them. The pimps all come from the same clan. The pirate pimps all come from the Marjitan clan of the president of Somalia's transitional federal government, Abdullah Youssef. And what they're doing with the money is not feeding the poor. They're doing what pimps do everywhere with the winnings. The pimps are building palatial mansions. The pimps are buying expensive cars. The pimps are buying tailor-made suits with the money. They're even stealing the grain that's being sent to their own country to feed the poor. So don't buy the garbage from the left-wing fools that they're doing it to protect their fishing grounds, and they're doing it for the betterment of the poor in their city. That's not what they're doing it for. They're just criminals. Now you say, well, what can we do about that? Well, if our military is incapable of going into this town and securing it, I mean, what do you need, 5,000 men, 10,000 airborne troops, 5,000, 10,000? You parachute them in off an aircraft carrier, off support ships. They're dropped by parachute. They surround the town, and then they go in, and they capture and kill the pirates. Those who fight, they kill. And those who don't fight, they capture. And then they bring them back either to Guantanamo or they bring them to the sanctuary cities like San Francisco and Berkeley and Austin, Texas, where they have such incredible compassion for the Islamo-fascist. And you release the captured pirates in Berkeley. You give them 2,000. You give San Francisco 4,000. You give Austin, Texas 10,000. However many captured pirates they want, they can have. And then you'll see what happens when the liberals have pirates living in their town. You'll see if they suddenly become a conservative overnight. But let's be focused and serious. The pirates are ramping up their attacks. They're adding ammo and men to the ships after the four U.S. hostages were killed, these elderly, beautiful people. What the heck are we sending the FBI and the Justice Department to investigate this? What? Do you actually think Eric Holder's Justice Department is capable of stopping piracy? Do you actually think the politically caponized FBI, which is afraid of its own shadow for fear of CARE and other groups, is going to do anything about what's going on with pirates? It's absurd. At least this is one man's opinion. I could be right. I could be wrong. More than likely, I'm right rather than wrong. But I'm open to discussion. The phone number here is 1-800-449-8255. And, of course, you understand the issue. There are other issues. I don't really want to talk about Wisconsin. I've given my opinion on it. I'll give it to you again. The governor is 100% right. The unions have gotten too fat. The public workers are doing much better than the private sector. He's trying to do what the voters put him in place to do, which is tighten the budget. The Democrats, being the cowards that they are and the anti-democratic individuals they actually are now that they have a minority position and not even going to show up for work, he has the power to fire them. He can say, you're not coming to work. You've been playing hooky. Either you're back by 9 a.m. tomorrow at your desk in the state capitol, or we're firing you. We're declaring you fired, and we're holding special elections next week in your district. Goodbye. And P.S., your pensions are gone. They'll be back. They'll come back from the gambling casinos in the surrounding states. And that's it. It's really simple. You do that. Same with the teachers. You'll be back at that desk tomorrow with the blackboard and the chalk, okay? Or you're fired and we're putting in replacements. Goodbye. All the teachers are fired. You're out on strike with your fake sick notes. You're fired. Goodbye. There were consequences. Reagan did it with the air traffic controllers. Don't you remember? Remember that great time that everyone said, "Oh, he's so an evil man, Ronald Reagan." Remember the air traffic controllers thought they had us by the you-know-whats? Oh, we're going on strike. We'll cripple the airline. And Reagan said, "I'll tell you what. You're all fired. Goodbye." And guess what? The next day he had trainees or whatever, assistants in there, and the airplanes were still flying. They lost their jobs. There's only comes a point where you can only push so far. Fire the teachers, fire the Democrat legislators, and move on. That's what you were elected to do. That's all. New York, WOR, Rick, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Michael, thanks for taking my call. I'd just like to agree with you wholeheartedly. The FBI, it's not their role to perform the function of dealing with these pirates. That they should be...
What has the FBI and the Justice Department got to do with piracy in Somalia? Nothing!
These people understand one thing. They understand brute force. And it's not going there doing criminal investigations and bringing these people back for criminal trials. That still...
We've done the criminal investigation. They're all criminals. They're all terrorists who are conducting these raids on ships. Now you put in the military. What do you mean investigate? What are you an investigation for?
Exactly. And
what's to investigate? They're holding 30 ships. Now you need an investigation for that?
Exactly. What would Reagan do right now if he was the president and this was going on, right?
Well, I don't think it would have gotten this far, to be honest with you. I think he would have bombed the town that they come from. He would have given them 48 hours to turn themselves in, and he would have either strafed or bombed the little village they come from.
Michael, it's criminals that the ships that pass through those lanes, and we have family friends that ride these oil rigs as engineers, and they're prohibited from having the weaponry on their ships to properly defend themselves. And that's what's criminal, that they could end this problem immediately if they could properly defend themselves against these nitwits.
There is a town called Isle, E-Y-L. When they steal the money, when they get their ransom, they go back and they're building palatial mansions, they're driving Mercedes, they're buying new suits. In other words, they're acting the way pimps would act with money. Is that correct?
Absolutely. He's a terrorist,
okay.
And nothing more.
That's why we call them pirate pimps on the Savage Nation. If they were taking the money and using it to feed the poor, you wouldn't be able to call them pimps necessarily. But they're living the way a pimp lives with his money. He spends it only on his own self-aggrandizement. In fact, they're even stealing grain that is being sent to Somalia for their starving masses. Do you know that?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
The town in Somalia is called EYL. Look it up on a map. And if you go to the town and you read the reports in the town, you will see that this is an industry being run by criminal gangs right now. And the town is a safe haven. It's become a business. And the $30 million in ransom paid last year is more than the annual budget of the entire city of Puntland that they come from. And the fact is that these 21st century pirates are going to get fatter, bigger, stronger, and more dangerous with the money unless they're stopped right now. And there's only one way to stop them. It's not once they're on the water. If there was any strategic thinking in the Navy at this time, they would go into the town with airborne troops. That would be my suggestion, to be very serious and very frank. That's a solution. We are in a fight for the survival of Western civilization. I don't think you understand this, because we have a leader who is either an appeaser. And, you know, to give him the benefit of the doubt, you could say Obama's an appeaser. He's like Neville Chamberlain. I actually think it's far worse than that, but I don't even want to go into the conspiracist side, because it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter whether Obama is a stealth fan of global Islamic State. All that matters is he's permitting a global Islamic State to emerge. Whether by accident or on purpose doesn't matter. I don't think you understand this, most of you, going about your everyday business, as we all have to do. Meanwhile, Obama and Brzezinski and Carter and others have set the world afire. The Middle East is burning. The pirates are out of control because of weakness of the West. And Obama has nothing to say for 9 days on any of these issues. So here we face a unique time in American history, unique in the sense that we have the strongest military in the world, we still do, with the weakest commander-in-chief at the same time. So, as you well know, it's all about leadership. If you have a more powerful force with a weak leader versus a less powerful force with a powerful, intelligent leader, the smaller force will always win. You look at historical battles, that's always been true. It's always been strategy. Almost 100% been strategy. And I don't know anyone listening to this show who could argue that with the Middle East burning, that Obama's a great strategist. Unless that's his goal, which is to set the Middle East on fire. Annette, Sacramento, welcome to the Savage Nation.
My opinion on Obama's ability as commander-in-chief is that he went to Harvard, not an academy, and he has no concept of history or war. And I would also bet that he sucks at chess.
Well, I don't know about that. All I know is that I hear that the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard is going to offer a new MBA in piracy studies. for the captured Somali pirates, they're going to send them to the Kennedy School of Government to get an MBA in piracy studies. You know, how to get a higher ransom, negotiating a better ransom for a ship and for hostages, and how to invest your money in liberal causes.
I'd also like to say that my son is a soldier serving in Afghanistan, and he is a man.
It's mothers like you who are saving America. Can I please send you a gift, a copy of Trickle Up Poverty? It's all I can offer you right now, Annette.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. That's my gift to you as one of the great mothers of America.
Savage.
We talked about the recent arrest of the Saudi student and his terror plot to allegedly bomb former President George Bush's house in Texas. Here's an exclusive report from Eric Stackelback.
Michael, always a pleasure to be here. And you know, we have the Middle East literally on fire right now with insurrections in several countries in the Middle East. Who comes to power? We don't know. Radical Islamists? We just don't know. But closer to home, we also still have that radical jihadist problem here in America. Now, recently, a Saudi student, a 20-year-old Saudi national, was arrested in Lubbock, Texas, of all places, Michael, and he was charged with plotting to carry out a series of bombings against U.S. targets, including the home of President George W. Bush in Dallas. So this guy, Khaled Ali Al-Dasari, that's a mouthful, 20 years old. He is a Saudi native, came here in 2008, Michael, legally on a student visa.
Oh, my God.
Now, this is why that is so significant. Back in 2005, believe it or not, I reported on a Saudi scholarship program. Ironically enough, Michael, this program began under the Bush administration, the very guy that Al-Dasari is targeting, George W. Bush. Under his administration, a program started, kind of a cultural exchange program, to bring thousands of Saudi students to American universities to study. That means thousands of young Saudi males, the same kind of Saudi males, 15 of 19 of which blew up the towers on 9/11, are here now in the U.S. as part of this scholarship visa program, and they're studying at American universities across the country. They're spread out. Now, obviously, the trap of this program, this exchange program, is that you will have an Al-Qaeda plant in Saudi Arabia signing up to take part in this program, being granted a visa, then coming here to America and conducting a jihad attack.
Oh, right.
That's exactly what this Khaled Al-Dasari, who was arrested, a student of Texas Tech University in Lubbock, of all places, hiding out down in Texas, he was arrested for doing exactly that. Al-Dasari said in his writings, which the FBI obviously reviewed, his website, everything, Al-Dasari said that even before he applied for this visa, when he was still living in Saudi Arabia, for years he had been plotting to attack America. The light bulb went off in his head, and he said, I'll get a student visa. And they have this Saudi scholarship program with the American government specifically targeting students from Saudi Arabia. Now, American successive American administrations, Michael, from Bush to Obama, view this as, I said, a kind of cultural exchange. Their philosophy is, hey, we'll bring more Muslim students here to study. Because when they return to Saudi Arabia or Iran or wherever else, they'll return with a positive view of America, and they'll tell all their family members and friends back in Saudi Arabia or where have you that America's a great place. In theory, you think, yeah, maybe it makes sense. Bring them here, expose them to freedom, democracy, the American lifestyle, and maybe they'll like it. Maybe they'll go back and tell a friend, and that will soften hearts in the Middle East. But it's not going to work.
Oh, I agree.
It's a completely naive view, Michael, as you know. A lot of times, and this has happened with Islamic terrorist leaders who have studied right here in America. Islamists, Muslims in general, come to America, live here for a few years, study, and they're repulsed. They're actually repulsed by the freedoms, especially women's rights, and how, God forbid, a man and a woman can walk down the street holding hands. They're repulsed by that. It's a complete turnoff for them. I'll give you two examples, Michael. Number one, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the mastermind behind the 9/11 plot. He attended a small school in North Carolina, of all places, and was repulsed by what he saw. Saeed Qutb, this was one of the founders of the Muslim Brotherhood, the notorious Muslim Brotherhood. Qutb studied in Colorado in the 1940s, 30s, 40s, 50s, sometime around then, I believe. Qutb studied at a college in Colorado. He later wrote about his disgust for American culture, how men and women could hold hands and actually rub shoulders in a public place. He was completely disgusted and repulsed by American society. And this was the 1940s, when it was a lot more puritanical than it was now. So you can imagine, when you have a young Muslim coming to this country now from a place like Saudi Arabia, which is kind of as traditional Islamist, you know, Wahhabi as you can get, take someone from that environment, bring them to America, it can go one of two ways. Hey, maybe he'll love the freedom, but the other danger is that he'll hate it, and he'll be completely turned off by it, and it'll make him loathe and resent the U.S. even more.
Well, of course.
Now, in the case of this young guy, Al-Dasari, who was arrested this week, he was planning this for some time. This is the big threat. If you're going to throw open the doors, you're going to throw open the doors to Middle Eastern Muslims. You're going to have the possibility, with these various exchange programs and refugee resettlement programs from Muslim countries, you're going to have the very real possibility that bad guys latch on to these programs in places like Somalia, where we have a refugee resettlement program, in places like Saudi Arabia, where we have this scholarship program. The bad guys, their eyes light up, and they say, excellent, I can get a visa, I can travel to the U.S. legally, maybe become a legal resident, maybe even become a citizen down the line. And they're very patient. They'll stay here for 5, 6, 7, 8 years, and they will plan, they will insinuate themselves into society, as this young man, this young Saudi's been here for 3 years, gradually planning his jihad against America. And it's a shrewd move by these guys. Why come here illegally, sneak across the southern border, when you can come here legally as part of a U.S. government-sponsored program? And then once you're here, all bets are off, and the jihad begins.
Exactly.
So that's what we had with Al-Dasari. I think that is the most interesting part about this, Michael, that he came here legally on a student visa. I'm sure he was part of this Saudi program that I discussed that began way back in 2005 under the Bush administration. That's something important to take from this. Number two, look, he was hiding out in Texas. Lubbock, Texas. This was not New York City, Chicago, L.A., traditional gateway cities for immigrants. Michael, I've discussed this with you many times on the show. Jihadists are now setting up shop in the most unlikely places. You're seeing mega mosques go up in rural Tennessee, rural Wisconsin, small town California. It's all part of a strategy to spread the jihad influence into every corner of America.
How could this be going on?
It's the Muslim Brotherhood strategy, and it's happening in rural areas. It's literally the jihadist in your backyard. So Al-Dasari was in Texas. That's the second interesting thing here, Michael. And the third thing that hopped out at me is I looked at Aldossari's Facebook page, and I reviewed the Facebook pages of his Facebook friends, and they're all big fans of an organization called the Movement for Reform, the Islamic Movement for Reform in Saudi Arabia. Now, that movement is headed up by a guy who lives in London, ironically enough. He's a Saudi exile. He's wanted in Saudi Arabia, but now he lives in London. His name is Saad Al-Faqa. Now, I told you about him a while back, Michael, probably several months ago on the show. I interviewed Al-Faqa for 2 hours in his London home.
Right.
Now, this is a guy who is a wanted terrorist. The U.S. and even the U.N. have designated him as a global terrorist. He's a guy with direct links to Al-Qaeda's hierarchy and direct links to Osama bin Laden. Yet he's living as a free man in London in a very nice home. But sat down, interviewed him, bad guy. Got his strategy for the West. He says more attacks are coming. This guy is basically an Al-Qaeda mouthpiece. So to see his influence, and he's in London, to see that apparently he influenced Aldossari, whether directly or most likely indirectly, apparently his writings, his speeches were an influence on Aldossari. His worldview, his ideology, Aldossari and his Facebook buddies were big fans of this guy, Saad Al-Faqa. That struck me, obviously, because I sat down with Al-Faqa face-to-face. So you have a situation here, once again, where you have a charismatic figure like an Al-Faqa, like an Anwar Al-Awlaki, who is able to pull these young guys in to jihad, these impressionable young guys. It always starts with that charismatic figure. And, Michael, there's another charismatic, radical Islamist figure who may be coming to Washington, D.C. on Wednesday, March 3rd.
Well, who's that?
A guy by the name of Anjem Chowdhury. Now, I know I'm throwing a lot of names out tonight. These aren't exactly Irish-sounding names, but bear with me. Chowdhury is another guy who is based in London, and he's another guy who I've interviewed. And he also, Michael, by the way, lives off welfare benefits from the British government.
Wait a minute. You can't be serious.
The very British government he calls to be overthrown, and he calls for Islamic Sharia law to be established in Great Britain. He wants Britain to be an Islamic state. He's known as the most hated man in Great Britain. He's really a radical mouthpiece. A bunch of his associates have been busted for fighting alongside the Taliban, for trying to join Al-Qaeda. It's shocking that Chowdhury hasn't been arrested yet himself on some kind of terrorism charge. But then again, we're talking about Londinistan, Great Britain, the home of political correctness. Anyway, Chowdhury is planning to come to Washington, D.C. and lead a protest in front of the White House with, I guess, a gaggle of American radical Muslims, lead a protest in front of the White House calling for Islamic Sharia law in America.
This is unbelievable to me.
Michael, if he, and I can tell you from experience, this is a bad guy. I interviewed him for an hour in London face-to-face. He made no bones about his goals for the world. He wants an Islamic caliphate, an Islamic superstate established in the world, and if you are an infidel non-Muslim and you get in the way, you're going to die. He makes no bones about that. He makes no bones about his support for Osama bin Laden and his plans for Britain, his approval of the 9/11 attacks. He has called the 9/11 hijackers, Michael, quote, the Magnificent 19. So if this radical jihadist mouthpiece from London is allowed into our country, I think that's a watershed moment in the global jihad. If the State Department, who, by the way, I have a call into, I'm waiting for word back, have a call in inquiring about Chowdhury, is he going to be allowed into the country? If he is indeed allowed into the United States, we have a serious, serious problem.
Well, of course.
Stay tuned, Michael. I'll be back on the show next week, and I will give you an update. Now, Chowdhury is supposed to be coming to D.C. with two of his associates, two guys who may be even more hardcore than him.
Really?
Now, some sources have told me, hey, we think the two associates won't be allowed in, but we think Chowdhury may very well be allowed into the United States. Now, he's going to lead a rally in front of the White House. This is who he is, Michael. So, you know, he's a well-known guy. He's an attention. He's a glory hound. He loves the cameras, loves the media spotlight. So he's going to set up shop in front of the White House. And I'll be very interested to see which American Muslims and how many show up in a show of solidarity with this guy as he calls for Sharia law in America. But as I said, Michael, if he is allowed into the country, it's a sad day for the United States if we're going to let this guy into the country, a known terrorist supporter.
Another foreign student, another Saudi. Very disturbing news, Eric. Thanks for the report to the Savage Nation.
Michael, thanks. Always a pleasure. And watch my show, cbnnews.com, Stackelbeck on Terror, the new episode filmed on the ground in Jerusalem. Thanks again.
I'll be right back. It's the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Markets. I have someone shop for me, but I reach the point where I want it because it's always wrong. If I ask for herring, it comes without juice in it. How could you eat herring without juice in it? Now, yes, why are you eating that? It's horrible. It is not horrible. Herring's a food very rich in omega-3 fatty acids. Yeah, you take the pills, but you also want to get the fish, right? So I eat herring, I eat anchovies, I eat sardines once in a while, whatever. But I happen to like herring on a bagel with tomato and avocado in the morning. I actually like that. With a cup of coffee and an orange juice. That's a typical breakfast. So I go to buy the herring, and the wait in this deli was beyond belief. First, I had to go through three non-English speakers. Now, have you tried to tell somebody from Mongolia in a white uniform with like an A&W hat on in a supermarket what herring is? Go try to explain it to someone from Mongolia. I mean, God bless her. I'm an immigrant son, but it's enough already with the English as a third language. I asked the woman, I said, where do you have herring? She gave me a look. I didn't know what she... Herring, all right, thank you. So finally someone on the line said, there's the herring, like an English speaker. The only English speakers in there were the customers. Oh, did I tell you the funny thing that happened in there? This, you got to hear this one. I'm in the supermarket waiting for the herring. Went on forever with the number. And I never saw a sandwich. It had five people with white hats on, six people making sandwiches. This is on a lazy Sunday. But I got to tell you something, out of town is a sort of torture. I've lived out of town so long, it's become normal. But at this point, it's reaching a critical mass. Remember, I grew up in New York where one deli man in one appetizing store on Long Island could serve 43 people in about 14 minutes. He could multitask. He was cutting a tongue sandwich. He was measuring the salami. He did so many things at once, and you were out of there in 5 minutes. No one had patience. That's how I grew up. Now you got six people with the root beer hats on. And they're making a sandwich, and you, why, would you like pickles on it? Yeah, and a little mayo. And it's like glue drying. Till he makes the sandwich, my hands are clenching. The foot is in the shoe, in and out. I don't say, how can you say anything? You move faster than them. What does that make them a criminal? No. So I'm standing there. So a big Italian guy with a booming voice on him. The guy was maybe 6'7". He was an older man. But he had a voice on him. When he talked low, the room like rumbled in a supermarket. The guy was a born actor. Maybe he is. You remember some of the characters in some of the early like gangster movies? There's one guy, I wish I knew his name. Of all of the Italian character actors, this guy was the best. He was in a movie. Wait, hold it. Someone's going to pick the name up. I know I got a listener in New York who's going to know. He'll tell me, yeah, it's my brother-in-law, Sal. It was the movie Prince of the City, number one. I forget the main actor in it. Prince of the City was good at that time. Then he started playing like... Light in the Shoe roles. Who was the guy who played in Prince in the City? I want to see if I'm even listening. The lights are a little dim right now. Who's listening? They want me to say, the mosque is no damn good. I'm telling you, end that mosque. I'm not going to do politics right now. I'm going to go back to the reminiscence and the deli. Does anyone know who the Italian actor is in Prince of the City that I'm talking about? The big guy who got into a ruckus and they threw him through a plate glass window. He was about six. Anyway, this guy was like him. 6'6", maybe 325 pounds. So he's standing in the deli. Wait a minute. He also is waiting for a sandwich. Good-natured guy. And a pockmarked face, even though you saw he had bad acne as a youth, which made him even meaner as a kid. But now he's like an ever-benevolent 65-year-old guy. Doesn't bother anybody. Looks like. So he's standing in the middle of nowhere on a Sunday. And he makes a remark, to the deli guy, but everyone heard it, with a rumbling voice. A booming, rumbling voice. He says, oh, I grew up in the New York... blah, 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 a sandwich, something like that, something nice. So the deli woman says to him, just matter-of-factly, she said, well, you must have grown up in a nice Italian neighborhood. She was trying to, you know, because he says, no, not so nice. Well, everyone breaks out laughing on the deli line, which is very funny. And it went from there, you know, some people have a natural sense of humor. He says, no, not so nice. And I don't know, one word led to the other. It was a very nice moment. The sandwich, Tilly got through with her, about 15 minutes till she made him his sandwich. And would you like a provolone? You know, another from the machine, another one, a slice. And they pick up in the hand and move. Next. It's like a bad, it's like a nightmare. It's like you died and went to like deli hell. Like, when is it sandwich? When can, and all I wanted was like a quarter of a pound of herring. I was embarrassed, by the way. So I bought other things that I didn't need. I threw them out. I was embarrassed just to buy herring. I waited so long. In other words, I made such an investment in time for the herring, I figured I'd buy other things. I took them home. I puked from one of them. It was horrible. Why do they put fennel on salads here in San Francisco? They made a thing with, I love artichokes. They did something with cooked artichokes with some, and with fennel on it. It was so, anise. I have never tasted a spice that does not belong on food like anise. Why call that an Italian salad? The only people who ate anise or fennel in Italy were those who were starving to death under Mussolini.